and welcome to The Eagle is Candid. That was the title of the lecture that I gave at English Martyrs School and Sixth Form College in Hartlepool. Previous speakers at this annual lecture, incidentally, have included Anne Widdicombe and Peter Mandelson. And I wasn't at all vexed to find myself preceding those two speakers. I think it's a logical choice. Where do you go next? Anne Widdicombe, Peter Mandelson. Let's go for David Eagle. It just seems to me logical, and I'm glad it seemed logical to them. Close friends of mine will, of course, recall their bitter disappointments when I discovered that I was not going to be asked to be European Commissioner of Trade in 2008. Very disappointed about that. I thought I'd be preceding Peter Mandelson there. And I'm still waiting for the phone call from the BBC to ask if I'd like to do Strictly Come Dancing. But at least English Martyrs School and Sixth Form College in Hartlepool realised that Anne Widdicombe, Peter Mandelson and myself go logically together. And I was also quite thrilled to present this annual lecture because I've heard that previous speakers all get together and have a bit of a party once a year and talk about old times when they used to present the lecture, their favourite bits, that kind of thing, swap anecdotes. So I'm looking forward next year to drinks and nibbles with Mandelson and Widdicombe. It's quite interesting. It's not really well documented in the media, but they forget their differences. Political differences, and they just kind of come together and have canapés. And apparently Anne Widdicombe's canapés are something else. So the subject I thought I would talk about in The Eagle is Candid was myself. I mean, I know there'd be a lot of people very disappointed if I didn't do that. In fact, I'm aware that there were a lot of people who were quite disappointed in Peter Mandelson and Anne Widdicombe's lecture that they didn't speak about me. That was one of the criticisms that was levelled at them. So I thought I best redress this balance, and since it is me doing the talking, I should probably talk a little bit about myself. So I decided to do that, and as well as that, to talk a little bit about blindness and disability, because this is kind of something that people are quite inquisitive about. I get stopped in the street quite frequently by people who ask me questions about what it's like to be blind and that kind of thing. So I thought that may be something that people might be interested in as well. So here it is then, 15 minutes from my lecture at English Martyrs School and Sixth Form College in Hartlepool, recorded on the 13th of March 2014, entitled The Eagle is Candid.
Thank you. I should probably start by apologising on aesthetic grounds. One of the purposes of this lecture was to try and fly the flag, I suppose, just about blindness in general, and just sort of say how blind people can be independent and can live a fully independent, integrated life. But I haven't really done a very good job of that because I've dramatically cut myself. I brutally cut myself, basically, while shaving. So it doesn't really help when you slit your throat to try and say how independent blind people are. Apologies there on aesthetic grounds. But the plus sign is, if you're not enjoying this lecture, then you can always think, excellent, the idiot is bleeding to death. So every cloud, as they say. So this is called The Eagle is Candid. Fear not, I'm aware that firstly this is a Catholic school, and secondly that we have quite a lot of students around, so the nature of my candidness will be somewhat diluted. So I apologise if people have come expecting the usual rollicking roller coaster of salaciousness, sex, drugs, debauchery and iniquity. There's not going to be too much of that tonight, so apologies if you've come for that, which is a bit of a shame really, because it leaves me with very little to talk about, to be honest. It's kind of like the cornerstone of my existence, really. So, because I can't talk about that, I thought that I would talk about myself, my life journey. I'll talk about my life from the perspective of a blind man. In case you're late to come into this lecture, the reason I'm doing that is because I'm blind. It's not some sort of existential thing. I'm going to talk about my life from the perspective of a blind man. It's like a philosophical bent that I have. So I'm going to be doing that. And the reason for that is, generally, I found that people are, in my opinion, astoundingly inquisitive about what it's like to be blind. And short of giving them a practical demonstration, which probably wouldn't go down too well, although I am tempted sometimes when I'm asked a litany of questions. I'm just stopped in the street by people, you know, they just basically ask me questions about blindness. And not only have I been stopped in the street, I've held up many checkout queues. When I say held up many checkout queues, I don't mean with a gun. I mean, that was only once, to be honest. I was very drunk, and I just feeling quite ill, to be honest. I've been held up in checkout queues because the lady serving me has wanted to know, you know, she's asking me questions like, how do you know how to do your shopping and that kind of thing? I'm thinking, well, that's obvious. I'm with a friend. That's how I do it. But sometimes I feel as if I should be sarcastic back. And the reason for that is not because I'm a horrible man or anything like that, but I think it's because you get asked the same questions over and over again. There's a tendency to think, I just want to entertain myself for once, rather than telling people the truth. That's why I entertain. So you've always got this thing of, shall I be a little bit sarcastic? There's two reasons why sarcasm often doesn't work. The first is because it makes you seem like, if I may use the expression, a bit of an arse. That's A-R-S-E. We're not American, right? Arse. I see, I might be profane, but I'm being educational with it, so Mr. Lee should be grateful for that. We don't want any Americanisms here, all right? No, sorry. So, first one is that reason I said. The second is because sometimes people believe what you say is true, so they don't realise that you're being sarcastic. So you have to start worrying about what ideas people might come away with about blind people. So, for instance, someone asked me how I knew where my shopping was, and I told them that ordinarily I have a guide dog. And what happens is I just say to the guide dog, I say, Rover, I'm looking for, and then I'll say the product that I'm looking for, maybe a tin of beans or something. And the dog will bound over and it'll sniff at the tin of beans. And I say, it's very clever, because then it'll bark in a special pattern, and that will alert me to the best before date and the sell by date. And then, you know, suddenly it's really clever now, they've got it really trained brilliantly, because what will happen is it'll go, and that is two for the price of one. It's like two for one, isn't it? It's absolutely brilliant. So yeah, so sometimes being sarcastic, it's fun, but at the same time it's kind of misguided, because people are probably going around thinking that that's gospel truth. My other favourite example of being questioned about blindness is in taxis. And I don't know what it is about taxi drivers, but they seem to take me on the most lengthy and circuitous route imaginable, so they can ask me, as I say, a litany of questions about being blind. But as well as that, it seems as if the science community are missing out on a trick by not employing people who drive taxis in Hartlepool. Because they all seem to know about science. They all, I don't know if we've got any, have we got any taxi drivers here tonight? Okay, just give it 30 seconds for it to register and then I'll respond. But the taxi drivers of Hartlepool, they say to me things like, don't you worry, sir. Mark my words, there will be a cure in your lifetime for going on. The science world isn't saying that, but why do these taxi drivers have some paradigm-shifting philosophies about it? And I think, don't be upset that I'm not taking what you're saying at face value here. Can you just get me to where we're going, for goodness sake? Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about how I became blind, now, everybody. And I had cancer at the age of 6 months old, and I lost my sight due to the drugs that... very bad parenting, I have to say. The drugs. The drugs that they gave me to treat the cancer damaged my optic nerve, and that made me blind as a result. And what's weird is when I tell this story, which I often do to people on buses or whatever, because they ask me, often a few times people have said, and do you remember, David, what it was like to see? And I think, well, no, I was 6 months old. And I'm quite glad that I don't, because if you think about what I would remember if I could see, it'd be fairly limited, really. It'd be like, the only idea of sight, proper sight that I have, are very good images of my mother's bare breasts and dirty nappies. That would be quite worrying. That's because she breastfed me, in case you think she's walked around the room naked all the time. This thing, by the way, that I'm reading bullet points from, is a braille machine, basically. For those people who don't know what braille is, it's kind of raised dots that I'm able to read. This is pretty nifty. This is an electronic device. You can send it to computers. I can email this across. I can show people what I've written. But when I was at school, and I'm 28, so we're only talking about, 20 years, 15 years ago, something like that, or less, I had to carry this massive metal, hunk of metal around with me. It would perforate the dots into a piece of paper. And my goodness, when it was like an earthquake, basically. So these were massive metal chunks of things. But let me give you an idea now of how technology has progressed, because back then, these are the things that I have to use. And then the teacher would have to underwrite what the support worker would have to underwrite what I'd written for the braille. So she would read the braille, and then she would underwrite what had been written. And then the teacher would read it. So it was a really laboured process. Now kids are using computers at school. You know, they're just typing it on the computers. The computers have got screen readers in there. That's just something basically that reads to you what's on the screen. Yeah, believe it or not, that's what a screen reader is. You never thought of it. The thing that astounds me is how technology has come on in leaps and bounds, basically. When I was younger, I remember like a computer would probably cost something like £700 or £800 back then, just a standard PC. And the screen reader would cost £1,000. So the screen reader was so much more expensive than the actual computer. Now, we live in a world where you have assistive technology. You have a screen reader, probably in your pocket. Anyone who has an iPhone has a screen reader in their pocket because it's all built in automatically to the phone. Anyone who's got an Apple Mac computer, it's all built in there, which is great news because if you lost your sight overnight, then it means you just press Command F5 and you think, oh no, I've lost my sight, but I need to get that spreadsheet done. You can do it. I mean, you probably want to go to the doctors first. This is just a theoretical example, but you could theoretically do that. So to give you an example of how this has revolutionised my life and how the technology has made everything so much more equal, just in my time, when I wanted to read a book in the past, I would have to almost spend a fortune on getting these Braille books, and then like 30 or 40 volumes of Braille would be delivered to the door. It was just really cumbersome. But now you can do it, just download a book on iBooks, and the screen reader will read it to me. So it's a completely different world. I've got instant access to reading material. But a real life example, just to put this into perspective, of how big Braille books are in comparison to print books, this is a situation that happened when I think I was about 13, and I arrived at the school and they said, David, we are very excited because we've got a special delivery coming that's going to revolutionise the way you study. A van pulled up and three burly blokes came out, sweating and panting, and they carried this massive box. And they were like, well, they slammed the box on the floor with a massive thud. And then this one particular gentleman was like wheezing over the box, thought he was going to have a heart attack. So they opened the box and they said, David, this box was like twice the size of me. And they said, David, look at what we've got. And I looked and I read on the front cover of this Braille book, it said, and there was like a whole host of other books, and it said, The English to French Pocket Dictionary, volume 38 of 40. And I was like, my goodness, you know, and every single time I would use this, and it was ridiculous, it was like impossible to use, because I was just praying that the teacher would just kind of stick to one letter of the alphabet, because I didn't want to go like trundling across the 5 minutes to this big warehouse where in the school where they were storing this book to trundle back. I got more physical exercise in French than I did when I was doing PE. It was absolutely ridiculous. I was like, please, let's just cover aardvark to avalanche. That'll be nice. One final example before we move on to talk about this life journey is an app that's on the phone, an application that's on that you can get on the iPhone and Android phones and stuff. And it's called Tap Tap See. And basically, you take a picture and it tells you what's in front of you. Now, this is absolutely revolutionary. I mean, to the point where you can identify products and that kind of thing. It can tell you what's going on. So my guide dog is now obsolete, obviously. No, I don't really have a guide dog. Don't worry. Don't think I'm... So that's why I put the guide dog down. It's not going to know really. In fact, let's get him out now and put him down right here on the stick. I'm going to save a fortune. So this app, Tap Tap See, what you do is you take a picture, and I'll give you an example of how brilliant this is. I took a picture of what was going on in my living room, and it said, white Caucasian lady with red dress ironing blue jeans on a white hot off the press, that's the make of the iron, ironing board, with man with red jumper, arms crossed, standing in background. So it really gives you to that amount of detail. It's absolutely brilliant. So imagine how I thought, this is going to revolutionise my life. And so I was walking down the street, and I thought, this is brilliant. So I'm taking loads of pictures, and I'm tapping away, and it's saying, bush with green berries, and I tap somewhere else, and it says, Thetford Walk, road sign, grey Mercedes. I was like, what, in this street in Hartlepool? Surely not. There must be a malfunction there in the software, I think. So I was taking a picture, and I tapped, then all of a sudden, smash! What the heck? And I clutched my head as I fell down to the ground. Clutching my head, the mobile phone flew out of my hand across the road. as I pulled myself up, thinking, what the heck was that? I scurried towards the phone, you know, blood trickling from my head, my hand on my head. And at that point, it did this fanfare and went, identified, lamppost. I was like, oh, thank you, now you tell me. So the technology's got a little way to go yet. I think you can see my point. We are getting there. Three primary things that interested me were music, comedy, and radio. Let me tell you a little bit about why comedy, particularly. And the reason for that was my favourite thing at school was bullying. Now, I must verify this, I don't mean being the bully, I mean being bullied. I absolutely loved it. I remember my brother, who's in the audience tonight, used to say, if you get any hassle, David, just tell me and I'll come round and I'll sort them out. And I remember thinking, no, I'm not going to tell him because I absolutely love being bullied. And the reason for this is because there were no threat to me, really. Most of the abuse was all verbal abuse, and I'm going to come to why I like that. But you may think, what about the physical abuse? How did you deal with that? I cite what I said earlier. I walked around with a massive hunk of metal. It's a drill machine. I also had a white cane as well. So these were two weapons that were not embargoed. So I was able to deploy them a lot quicker than 45 minutes. So this is the real meaning of a weapon of mass destruction, my friend. So so that's the reason why I didn't get any physical hassle. So it was generally all verbal abuse, really, that I got. And I gave, I would like to think, a lot better than I got. So because the comments were fairly asinine, really. People would just come up to me and they would say, this is what they were doing. look at it, you're blind. you can't see. Blind. That kind of thing. So it's quite easy to come back with, well, actually I have some residual vision in my left eye. They weren't expecting that residual vision in the left eye put down. They weren't expecting that. So they were pretty unprepared, really, for what was to come. And so I sort of enjoyed it, and I used to relish the bullies coming to bully. So much so that I would, like, spend my time in class, like, preparing lines that I could deliver, so ready for the playground as time went on. And as time went on, like, I would get, like, an assemblage of people come gather round to see the verbal sparring between me and the bullies. It was like my first stand-up gig. It was absolutely brilliant. And as time went on, I thought, I'm going to have to move away from the scripted put-downs. They're getting a bit prosaic now. They're getting a bit predictable. I'm going to have to... So I would kind of think, I need to improvise, you know. I need to keep the crowd pleased, you know what I mean?
So that was a 15-minute extract from my lecture, The Eagle is Candid. Thank you very much for listening. I'm thinking of developing a lot of those ideas into more involved stand-up routines, and I will keep you informed about that and how that develops. I might be too preoccupied with the whole Strictly Come Dancing European Commissioner of Trade stuff that I'm probably going to spend my life doing, but we'll see. Anyway, to keep up to date with everything that's going on, visit davideagle.co.uk, and that will keep you up to date with everything that's going on in my life. I shall try and update it very soon. I shall try and put a Young'uns podcast up there as well, if not at the end of this month, certainly at the beginning of next month. It's all very hectic at this moment in time, but for good reasons, for excellent reasons, my friends. So thank you very much for listening. We'll speak very shortly. Bye-bye.